Jory Lovello makes some questionable decisions. The battle for the D-backed closer is really heating up, and Josh Naylor is a top 1% base runner? All that and more coming up on the T-Bags podcast.
Perdomo makes the play.
And a high fly ball. No doubt about this. Home run Marte.
They're going to send the ball all the way around. Corbin Carroll with it inside the park. Answer back.
I'm Ivan Melendez.
I'm Luis Gonzalez.
I'm Tori Lovello, and you're listening to the T-Bags podcast.
T-Bags podcast.
T-Bags podcast.
Arizona's number one baseball and beverage podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the T-Bags podcast, where we bring you the hottest Arizona Diamondbacks tea and talk every week from across the pond here in London. We are proud to be Arizona's number one baseball and beverage podcast. This weekend, us D-Bags fans have been put through the ringer a little with some big ups and downs as the Snakes went on the road to Chicago. And the Windy City really earned its name as we had thrills, spills, rain delays, and everything in between. So, without any further ado, let's dive right into the recap. Game 1. Corbin Burnes got through the first inning without giving up a run, which is a nice change. The defense was working fairly well behind him despite the wind and left one stranded. And the D-backs had the Cubs outfield diving all over the place in the second. You know, solid contact is good. Ian Happ and Pete Crow Armstrong seemingly were better. They covered ground really well in that outfield. They're both Gold Glove caliber fielders, had struggled a little defensively on the road in San Diego, so, you know, it figures they'd get their act together against us. And that they did in the bottom of the second, as former Diamondback Carson Kelly, who had been hitting .407 average so far leading into that game in 2025, put a two-run homer over the wall in center field. Aside from that, which, you know, was a blow, Burnes had looked okay, and he responded after that by going and getting the Cubs' next four batters, getting through the fourth unscathed with a little help from Gino Suarez and Gabby Moreno, making a very solid play to tag out a run at home off of an infield knock. So, you know, the Corbin Burnes agenda, we're starting to warm up a little bit after what, in all honesty, has been a pretty shaky time of it. Corbin Burnes got the Diamondbacks on off with, you know, limited damage. The other Corbin Carroll, got the D-backs on the board scoring-wise, pumped a 95-mile-an-hour fastball high into the batter's eye, driving in Gabby Moreno in the fifth. And then, yeah, Geraldo Perdomo picked up a nice double to make two and three bases, which didn't quite score Corbin, and although the Cubs did escape that jam, the D-backs were fighting, clawing. It wasn't like they were just laying over and dying after that, giving up that homer. Corbin Burnes had an okay day. He was replaced with Ryan Nelson, who entered the game in the seventh inning stretch. Promptly loaded the bases, looked very unsettled, gave Ian Happ a grand slam, dropping the score to a five-run deficit at 6-1 on, you know, a challenge fastball, which, you know, Ian Happ isn't somebody most sane pitchers would do that to. We know that he is a player that Chicago can always somewhat count on when it comes to delivering offensively. And especially on a day where the wind was carrying any hard hit ball a spare 20 feet, because, you know, we're in Wrigley Field, it's Chicago, it's the Windy City. Ryan Nelson probably shouldn't have done that. It wasn't exactly his best outing, especially when you consider, you know, he was coming in on, you know, a very tight game. It was 2-1 game at that point. Keep the objective coming out of the bullpen. He had been told, you know, just do your job, keep it close, try not to do anything stupid. And then he loads the bases and gives a grand slam. So, yeah, not Ryan Nelson's best day in a Diamondbacks uniform. He then gave up another triple to Kyle Tucker. And I'm not going to blame Ryan Nelson for that one. This was like a low ball below the zone, kind of below the knees to Kyle Tucker. He sort of dug it out, looped it for I thought, oh crap, here we go again. But no, it was only a triple. And yeah, Ryan Nelson, sorry, not your best day. We move on. Good news is, we're the Diamondbacks, or should I say the Rallybacks. They came back in with back-to-back knocks from Randall Grichuk, Josh Naylor, and Lourdes Gurriel Jr., before Gino Suarez became chief of the answer backs with a colossal 458-foot grand slam, takes his tally to 6 homers for the year. And if you want a fun fact, 5 of those have been against the Cubs, if you remember that amazing amazing home run streak. He went on an absolute tear to start the year. Jake McCarthy then took a walk before Alec Thomas's single. Gerardo Perdomo batted in McCarthy to make a one-run game. Before, yep, it's the comedy of errors time. Once again, an easy Grichuk ground out let the knock get into the outfield. Before Carson Kelly cocked up the tag on Perdomo at home to give the Diamondbacks an 8-7 lead in the eighths, you know. Just building up that hope, really getting into our heads a bit. The Cubbies' nightmare continued a little bit. Lourdes Gurriel got a slider hanging over the plate and gave the Diamondbacks the 9th, 10th, and 11th runs. And when I say the D-backs were fighting, clawing their way back, boy, did they ever. And then it all went to pot. Carson Kelly got another homer in the bottom of the 8th to make it 11-10 off of Bryce Jarvis. And yeah, that was kind of Torrey's cue. Get Jarvis out of there. Let's think. Get somebody in the bullpen. Somebody reliable. Maybe, you know, make a big impact. And then in comes Joe Manaply. That wasn't really a move that inspired a lot of confidence when those bullpen doors swung open. And my gut instinct when I was watching it live was proven right. Manaply gives up a single, then a Kyle Tucker homer to surrender the lead immediately. Then Seiya Suzuki pumps another one into the bleachers off of Manaply, and the offense's hard work was all undone. It was a classic instance of wanting a lefty pitching, just for that lefty-on-lefty matchup, but we spoke about this last episode. Manaply isn't a high-leverage guy. I don't think he's really been a high-leverage guy too many times in his career. He's definitely not one right now. And people are saying, why didn't we get Shelby Miller? I genuinely don't know why we didn't get Shelby Miller in that scenario. He just certainly wouldn't have been so quick to throw a low-velocity pitch, easy to track out of the hands on the bat, and it was meatball Manaply all the way to the fence and passed it out of the stadium. And as much as I like to joke about all-star Joe Manaply, his spot in that bullpen probably should have been Dre Jameson's going into this game. Like, you had the opportunity before going on this road trip to maybe make some adjustments to the bullpen. Look at, you know, likes of Dre Jameson, look at the likes of Juan Murillo and say, yeah, let's go get those guys in there. High velocity, potentially high leverage guys, fresh arms would have been useful to have, but we didn't have them. So that was that. Joe Manaply basically single-handedly loses the Diamondbacks a game. In all fairness, it's not like the Diamondbacks 7, 8, and 9 hitters were, you know, completely out of blame, but they came in to face the closer Ryan Pressly, which is, you know, about as much luck as we had going for us all day. Gabby Moreno flew out on a fly ball in foul territory. Jake McCarthy grounded out to Michael Bush, who, to be fair, made a very good play at first to stop a ball getting past him and up the line. Alec Thomas kind of lightly reignited our spirits with a double to the wall at center right. But flipping the over order, Corbin Carroll came up, and I thought, oh, Corbin, you know, maybe he'll help. But no, popped up lazily. And that was a wrap to what was a crazy, infuriating, disappointing game one of the series. Now, all's fair in love and war, and then you'll tell me and tell me again, there's no crying in baseball, but man, Torrey putting in Joe Manaply cost us what could have been an absolutely spectacular comeback win. And that was really, really hard to stomach in the moment. And this is sort of prevalent on a wider theme that we're going to talk about once we finish reviewing the series of Torrey Lovello, bullpen, what's going on, hello. Let's talk game two. Game two, Zach Gallen on the mound. It also saw the changes to the bullpen that we were all crying out for after the disaster class that was Friday night. So Dre Jameson, Juan Murillo, and J.P. Feyerson all called up to the bullpen in a move that surprised absolutely nobody. Corresponding moves, Joe Manaply optioned, Gray Kessinger DFA'd, and A.J. Puck was placed on the 15-day IL with elbow inflammation, and whether or not that's true or not, whether or not this is another just a phantom IL situation just to sort out a bullpen for a problematic series or not, we're not sure. I have no reason to believe that AJ Puck isn't actually injured, but clearly it's not too serious. It's only a 15-day IL job, so that did leave Jalen Beeks as the only lefty in the Diamondbacks bullpen, but yeah, we'll talk about him in a minute. On the field, Corbin Carroll started the night where the D-backs offense had left off the previous night with a dinger to center, but that was kind of it. That was all the Diamondbacks really did all day. Zach Gallen couldn't really help himself. gave the Cubs some batting practice. It was a very flat performance. Corbin was 3-for-4, but the rest of the team went 1-for-28, and even the revamped bullpen didn't really do much. It did include a major league debut for Juan Murillo, who came up from Reno. He's got some good velocity. He didn't do badly, but yeah. We took the loss there, and not much to say about it. Tim Tower also got a home run, but yeah. Meant nothing at all, and Tim Tower is going to be another topic of conversation that we're going to have in a second. Let's talk about Game 3, which got underway after a couple of rain delays. The Cubs got the first three outs, and then just as Merrill Kelly got his first and second strikeouts, just as he was probably getting warm, the umpires paused the game, and Torey Lovullo and Merrill Kelly were very vocally upset about that. It's really not good for a starting pitcher to kind of get into that frame, get into that physical space, and then get told, oh yeah, no, actually stop pitching. Cold turkey. Really wasn't great for Merrill. And when the game finally resumed proper, the Diamondbacks found themselves down a run because Merrill had, in that cold, windy Wrigley Field scenario on Sunday night, had given up a homer. But it was not for long, though. Pavin Smith notched a groundrel double before the ribby machine Josh Naylor drove him in and made it 1-1. That's how it stayed for several innings, as Merrill clearly wasn't too badly affected by the stoppage. He went the next 5 2/3 without allowing a run in a pretty solid battle with the Cubs starter, which was Jameson Taillon. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's hard not to call him Jameson Taillon, but I think it's Taillon, isn't it? Anyway, Merrill did, however, come out of the game with the Diamondbacks trainer in tow, although the injury wasn't apparent as we were watching the broadcast. Didn't appear too serious, whatever it was. He walked off. Didn't seem particularly in amount of pain or anything. There was no visible cries of anguish or anything else like that. The word was it was a right leg cramp, and he came out of the game off a streak of retiring 16 Cubs in a row after giving up that run in the first inning. So, yeah, pretty good day for Merrill. Not another win for him in the win column. I know he's tied with Brandon Vaught for most wins on our starting pitching staff right now, which, you know, we both know that those guys are pretty good. So that statistic potentially says more about how disappointing Zach Gallen and Corbin and Burns have been this year than Merrill Kelly and Brandon Vaught being, like, amazing. We know they're both pretty good, but yeah, no win for Merrill this time around. He was replaced by Ryan Thompson, Submariner. He came in, got Seiya Suzuki out, and got the Diamondbacks into the seventh. Thompson then allowed one base runner, but struck out two. He was then replaced by Jalen Beeks, who I said we'd talk about, and he did. It was a lengthy battle between Beeks and Pete Crow Armstrong, but Beeks did eventually get PCA with that fastball in on the hands to reach the eighth. Pete Crow Armstrong visibly furious, striking out on that one, going for the swing and then kind of checking but going too far. Either way, the fastball was in the zone anyway. Smashed his bat down. Really lost his temper at that one. You could tell how upset he was in what would have been a big clutch situation. You know, Chicago Cubs fans chanting, PCA, PCA. That's my Chicago impression. Apologies if you're Chicago and please don't come for me. Let's keep talking Diamondbacks before I get myself in more trouble. Beeks produced a solid eighth despite Tim Tower playing some shaky defense and emerged unscathed. So let's talk a little bit about that. What an acquisition Jalen Beeks has been, by the way. Colorado isn't somewhere you'd expect to go and find a go-to bullpen arm in high-level situations, but Mike Hazen has really managed it. Diamond in the rough type shop. This is kind of very a last-minute acquisition, if you remember. That was when Jordan Montgomery's arm blew up. So Diamondbacks very much went and plucked a diamond from the Rocky Mountain side on that one. Jalen Beeks, tip my hat to you, sir. I believe he has a sub-100 ERA right now across a significant amount of innings worked. So, yeah, good job there. And that was very much sort of setting the table for what could have been quite a special night for the Diamondbacks. Let's tell you what happened. it was Shelby Miller as the call for the ninth inning. So we did have some confirmation that he was still around after his mysterious lack of appearance on Friday. I'm still kind of mad at you for that one, Tori. And yeah, Shelby Miller did the job in the ninth nicely. Struck out Dansby Swanson again, by the way, if you're keeping score of the points in that trade. We had the first Shelby Miller Diamondbacks Dansby Swanson Cubs showdown in the home series at Chase Field, and then we had it again in this one. And it's 2-0 in favor of Shelby Miller on that one. So as a lot of guys pointed out, yeah, we won that trade. And into extra innings we went. In the 10th inning, it was Jose Herrera who tried to sack bunt, which turned into an RBI on a weird error at first base for the Cubs, which gave the Diamondbacks the lead in the 10th inning with the Manfred runner, the extra inning guy, if you remember how that works, coming in from second. And that wasn't on my list of things to be expected of Nico Horner at first base in that Cubs team, but I was very grateful for it. Unfortunately, first pitch from Shelby Miller meant the Diamondbacks' lead didn't last long. First pitch from him in the bottom of the 10th, and that was confirmation that actually, yeah, he could go two innings, so why didn't he play on Friday, Torrey Lovello? Anyway, yeah, first pitch from Shelby in the bottom of the 10th, bounced off of Tim Tower at second, could have potentially been a play at the plate if Tower had gloved that cleanly, but it allowed the extra inning Cubs runner to score. There goes the lead. It was a moment where perhaps we were all expecting a Justin Martinez appearance to go for the save there, but alas, Torrey made another call that we can't quite compute. We've now been told that, yeah, Justin Martinez was fatigued, so it was technically a rest day on the trainer's advice. I think that might have been the reason. I'm not sure whether or not we have to take that information with a pinch of salt, whether or not that's Diamondbacks kind of covering their manager's backside a little bit on that one. I'm not going to even mention, when it comes to questionable covering the backside, Diamondbacks office slash manager slash coach tools, that literally seconds after Garrett Hampson struck out trying to bunt, Jordan Lawless bunted safely for an RBI down in Reno literally minutes later. And he's another guy who must be wondering what it'll take for him to be called up. Anyway, Shelby Miller navigated the rest of the 10th without allowing a devastating walk-off sweep, which, you know, really would have sucked. While Josh Naylor kicked off the 11th inning with an RBI, he jumped on the first pitch, smacked it up the first baseline, bringing in Geraldo Perdomo. And then in a wild turn of events, Josh Naylor found himself at third base, tried to steal home, and was thrown out to end the inning. And honestly, wild vibes. Kind of sucked that he got called out. It was a play that the Diamondbacks did challenge. It was reviewed, and eventually he was called out. I think he probably was out. It was very close. But yeah, that was kind of sucked on that one. Time for a tea break. That's very good. I've got a hot organic thing from Clipper Tea Company today. It's a new one. It's one of those things where, you know, does anybody else's parents just like randomly have things lying around the house and like random whole boxes of food and stuff that they'll just give you when you go and visit, even though you've not asked for anything? You've already got groceries at home, and they'll say, oh no, take this because we're not gonna have it. And it's just like an entire box of like 400 tea bags, because that's what's happened with me. And I've got some Clipper organic fair trade English breakfast tea, and it's pretty good. So yeah, keeping me well fueled to talk about the rest of the game. Josh Naylor thrown out, stealing home, and this came moments after we all heard that Dre Jameson was the man warming up in the bullpen instead of Justin Martinez, who, as we now know, was apparently being rested, which is another weird scenario in which Troy Lovello is saying, oh yeah, this guy is being rested ahead of what we've got coming up, and the day after is a rest day. Troy Lovello has a weird habit of saying, yeah, we're going to rest them ahead of a rest day. I don't think they need that much rest, Torrey. He said this about Ketel Marte earlier in the year, some random times. So yeah, it was a bit odd. And yeah, after that bit of dusty drama at home plate, it was Dre Jameson in for his first Major League Baseball appearance since 2023. And man, he got to work quickly. He put a ball off of Hap's bat into Perdomo's glove, taking a really good defensive play. Stepped on second to get the double play as the Manfred runner had no chance of getting back. Really simple way of getting that sorted. And Carl Tucker lazily flew out to Alec in center field. And that earned Dre the save. The Snakes avoided getting swept, and we finally had a little bit to celebrate in that topsy-turvy series against the Chicago Cubs. Although, that means there are some questions to be asked of the Diamondbacks coaching staff too, don't get me wrong. Now, I think beyond quizzing Torrey on the weird schedule of rest days for some of our most important bullpen guys, J-Mart especially, we really do have to wonder about what the Tim Tower experiment brings to the Diamondbacks roster over somebody like Jordan Lawler, who this week was 4-9 average, 3 homers, 9 RBI, 4 stolen bases, and a 1.480 OPS down in Reno, which, you know, it's pretty good. He's pretty much a surefire shot as he's going right now for the MVP of the Pacific Coast League. And then you compare this to Tim Tower, who randomly does pop a solo homer now and then. We know he has solid power when he makes contact, but strikes out more often than he doesn't. Lots of swing and miss. Seemed a very easy out to get throughout the majority of the series against the Cubs. And he was also playing some less than stellar defense, less than stellar offense as part of a 7-8-9 trio who collectively went 3-36 in the series against the Cubs. And that is the unfortunate side effect of moving Perdomo up the order. He's now in the number 2 spot, which is usually occupied by Ketel Marte. After having such success being the number 9 guy to be like a consistent turnover guy setting the table at the bottom of the order for the Diamondbacks for the big guys to come up. That was Perdomo's kind of big role last year, and he did so well at it. He's had a good year. Like, obviously, he's generated solid pop from his bat. He's been really good, as we expect from Perdomo, earning those walks, but he's doing it higher in the order, which means that we don't have that impact surprise bat as much at the bottom of the order. Now, we might be expecting to see some changes this week coming into the homestead against the Rays and the Braves, who both have losing records right now, and who also seemingly have no answers for their poor form. So coming off of our road trip where we went 4-2 out of 6 games isn't exactly a bad result. Obviously, that sweep in Miami was a very good start, although somewhat expected, no shade to Miami. But hopefully the D-backs can ride yesterday's extra inning momentum a little bit more to put up some more W's in the left column, fight their way up from fourth in the division. It's crazy to think we would be leading a couple of divisions with our current record, but nope. NL West or NL Best, if you believe the Reddit propaganda, goes absolutely crazy. But I think coming back to Chase Field right now is kind of exactly what we need. You're going to start to see potentially the return of Ketel Marte in the next like week and a half. Coming off that hamstring strain, it was only a strain, not a tear, which is always good news. But we've got a bit of a revamped bullpen. AJ Puck will come back at some point, probably not this week, but Dre Jameson has proven that, you know, he's trustable in high leverage situations, so Torrey can always go for him over Justin Martinez if we need. If he's not comfortable always putting Martinez in, let's not forget, when it comes to resting Justin Martinez, I know that's a very much a point of discussion. He is a guy who hasn't actually played a huge amount of baseball in his career. He came kind of from high A, only played like 8 games coming off of Tommy John when he sort of started out in the Diamondbacks organization. He sort of got thrown in a bit at the deep end. Had sort of that 1 year where he was potentially the setup guy in some cases for Paul Sewald. And then Paul Sewald obviously departed partway through last year. And then it was Justin Martinez's job. And Torrey Lovello very reluctant to name him the out-and-out closer. Clearly he's got the stuff, but maybe he just doesn't have the experience. And that's why we're not getting as much of him as Diamondbacks fans would want. Ultimately, having somebody like Dre Jameson, and you're soon going to get the return of Kevin Ginkle off the IL as well, if rumors are to be believed, that gives you a lot more trusted bullpen arms. If Dre Jameson is as good as he was yesterday, Kevin Ginkle is as good as we know he always is, and then you can sort of not worry too much about whether or not Ryan Thompson's going to come in and have a shaky day, which he has been known to do. Jalen Beeks has
been ever reliable right now with the only lefty in that bullpen. And then Juan Murillo does have velocity, which is something the Diamondbacks bullpen sort of doesn't rely on as much as other teams do. When it's having good velocity is always proven effective. So that's pretty solid. I don't know too much about JP Fireisen. He's ex-Dodger, if memory serves. I haven't seen too much of his pitching, but if we're calling him up as well, I don't think it's going to be like a huge case of, like, oh, we're getting a veteran guy like Dylan Floro was with an absolute disaster class last year. I think he's just somebody to have as an option. I don't know kind of what kind of record he has. I'm going to pull it up and have a look at it now. J.P. Fireisen, American baseball pitcher. Thank you, Google. Yeah, on the Arizona Diamondbacks. Yeah, this is the guy. 6'2", 215 pounds, age 32. What's his record look like? MLB. Made his debut in 2020 with Milwaukee. 2021, he was across two different teams. He was with Milwaukee and then Tampa Bay. Spent 2022 in Tampa Bay, 2024 with the Dodgers. Does this technically mean he has a World Series ring? I don't think so. He made 10 appearances for the Dodgers in 2024 with a 0-1 record, 8.18 ERA. So, in 11 entire innings. I don't think that qualifies you for a World Series ring. I might be wrong. But, yeah, so far, one appearance for the Diamondbacks, one innings pitched, 0.0 ERA, which, you know, if he keeps it like that, yeah, no complaints. JP Fireisen, keep doing your thing, dude. I think I saw a tweet the other day from UK D-backs on X in the bad place that was like, I don't think I could ever risk getting a bullpen jersey for the Diamondbacks just for fear of what might happen. JP Fireisen, if you finish the season with the Diamondbacks and you're listening to this podcast right now, which is unlikely, but you never know, I like having celebrity listeners. If you finish the Diamondbacks season with a 0.00 ERA and you play, you know, let's say 10 games, I will get a jersey. I will get one of those ridiculously expensive, like, new, apparently better, but still Fanatics template, but stitched instead of heat-pressed jerseys with JP Fireisen on the back. I've already kind of promised this year I'm going to get a Tim Tower jersey, and then look what happened after I said that. He suddenly became, you know, the weak link in what is historically a very good defense. So I've probably just cursed JP Fireisen. If you're listening and you're vaguely religious, you know, do some prayers, do something to cover JP Fireisen from the curse of being talked about on the T-Backs podcast. It's never really worked out too well for most of the guys I've talked about. I said 2 years ago, and the future of this bullpen is Andrew Solfrank. Look what happened to him. I said that Paul Sewald should be our closer for all of 2024. Look what happened to him. So, yeah, I'm going to stop pretending like I know ball now, and we're going to wrap the episode up there. I want to say thank you very much to the supporters of the podcast over at the Home Run Travel Company. Time is running out if you want to book your spot on the Home Run Travel Company's West Coast tour this year, later this summer, where we are going to be going all over the West Coast. We're hitting San Francisco, San Diego, Los Angeles, Anaheim, and Seattle, seeing some incredible baseball, including a rematch of the 2024 World Series with the Dodgers taking on the New York Yankees at Dodger Stadium, where I am desperately going to be trying to blend in and not get any arguments with a Dodgers fan where I wear head-to-toe Diamondbacks gear. I will be in stealth mode Diamondbacks, stealthy snakes. Is there a kind of snake called the stealth snakes? I'm going to have to find that out before I go, and then I'm going to have to make a whole episode about it. Anyway, thank you very much for listening, everybody. Please remember to subscribe, like, follow, wherever it is that you're tuning in or watching. Please make sure that you follow us over on all social media. We are usually at T-Backs Podcast, and we are at T-Backs over on TikTok as well. I have been your host, GB Diamondback. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you on the next one.